Welcome to the Arts Incubator of Richardson podcast series and Airtime with Chris Tucker. Airtime uses a radio show format and features a guest artist who shares about their art and experiences. This program was recorded on September 11th, 2011.
Well, welcome to Airtime here at the Richardson Theater Center. My name is Chris Tucker, and I'm your moderator for this evening. In my years as a radio announcer for WRR, composer, performer, and conductor, organizations such as AIR, Arts Incubator of Richardson, engage its communities with worthwhile events to showcase the arts. Airtime is a program designed to be a collective think tank on the arts, and we accomplish this by bringing in the artists from our community and engaging our audience members. In radio broadcasting, time is an important component. So to help us along the way, we have someone keeping an eye on the clock. When time is up for a particular section, we'll hear this sound, a slide whistle. So please welcome our guest speaker, Jennifer Chobanu.
Thank you.
Did I pronounce that correctly?
Perfectly. I'm actually very impressed by that pronunciation.
Well, thank you for joining us this evening. Jennifer Chobanu is the adjunct instructor of voice at the University of Texas at Arlington and as well as Dallas Christian College. She's also taught at the Bernstein School of Musical Theater in Italy. Her vocal career has taken her all over the world, including Italy and the Czech Republic. She recently completed the Doctorate of Musical Arts at the University of North Texas, studying with Lynn Eustace. And she'll be featured this Sunday at the Eisman with the Lone Star Wind Orchestra, singing arias and songs from George Gershwin's Porgy and Bess. Let's start with your upbringing. Growing up, did you ever see yourself singing professionally in some of the great halls, teaching others to sing? Did you have non-music dreams as well?
I did have non-music dreams. I think my first dream was to be an astronaut. I was fascinated by the stars and by outer space, particularly when my family made a move from the small town or small city of Hattiesburg, Mississippi. I grew up in Hattiesburg, to the outerlying rural area, to a really small little place. They bought some land, so they had some acreage out there, and I just would go outside at night and be overwhelmed by the stars and the beauty there. So my first ambition was to be an astronaut. Then I found out I was going to have to learn a lot of math. So I gave that up. But very, very soon, very early in life, being on the stage and singing was a passion, something that I loved, and a place in which I felt very at home. So I always knew, I think, that music would at least play a really important role, if not be a career. And then it was about midway through high school, after I had been studying classical piano. Really, classical piano was first for me before voice. But so in that point, I was focusing on piano, and I went to Brevard Music Center in Brevard, North Carolina. And I actually was on a piano scholarship going there, but I found myself being pulled to the opera people, the older people that were singing in the opera company there and participating in the choir there. And I found myself being really pulled that direction just as equally. So I would say that around high school is when I really realized music will be my, not just a hobby, not just something that I like to do, but something that I really want to do as a living, finding a way to make it a living.
I have to ask, what year did you go to Brevard Music Center? I was there in 94, 95.
Okay, that I was before that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That would have been really funny.
I went there in clarinet performance.
Okay, so. Okay. Yeah, so, that was. I think it was 90.
It was a great place.
One or two or something.
Yes. So you had mentioned you played piano through high school. Did you have the chance? When did you start actual singing? I mean, getting into singing. Was that in high school, the choir?
It was as well. I also took private voice lessons growing up in high school. So I did private voice and private piano. All through, in addition to the private lessons, I did the choirs, the show choir, those groups, community theater. So I did pretty equal as far as the piano voice emphasis. It's just that for some reason the voice was a little slower realizing that may be the career direction. In the eighth grade, actually, I remember an incident in the eighth grade where they had some sort of career day, and you were supposed to write down what you wanted to do. And I wrote down I wanted to be a piano teacher at the college level. I'm sure the people in the rural Jones County of South Mississippi were, really? You know. So that was what I thought I would do in eighth grade, was be a piano professor at the college level. And so it's funny how now I'm doing the same thing, but in the voice area. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I answered your question. I don't even remember what the question was.
I think that's good enough. Okay. That was good enough. Actually, I mean, being in the show part, did you get slushied?
Slushied?
Oh, reference to Glee.
No, this was pre-Glee.
Okay, this is pre-slushy.
Pre-Glee.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, we know you recently earned a DMA at the University of North Texas in Denton. Tell us more about your schooling post-high school, which led up to the graduate work at UNT. You told me you spent a great deal of time studying in Italy.
I did. I had 5 years of an undergrad at Southeastern Louisiana University, where I did a double major, Glutton for Punishment, in piano and vocal performance. Did a master's degree at UNC Greensboro. Then that's when I moved to Italy. So I went from the master's experience to Italy. I was not chosen for a Fulbright scholarship, which I applied for. I was hoping that I would be able to get a Fulbright. I put together what I felt to be a really strong application for a Fulbright to study in Italy. I had contacts in Italy because I had been there previously studying in summer programs before actually finishing my master's. But that was denied, but I was determined to go anyway. So I took a job as an au pair with an Italian family and moved to Italy 1 month after graduating with my master's. So that's kind of where that fell.
And when you finally made it to Italy for this longer stay, what was your focus? Did you plan on studying specifically with somebody or joining a group, opera company?
Mm-hmm. I didn't have a true focus right away. I just knew I wanted to be there. I knew I wanted to continue mastering the language because I had become pretty proficient, I would say, in Italian, but I wanted to become fluent. So that was one focus. Secondly, I did want to sing, but I didn't know which direction that would take, whether or not it would take, I didn't anticipate it taking a professional route immediately, just because knowing my age, knowing where I was in my technical development. Some things to people that are not singers that may not be apparent are the technical development of the voice, and that everyone has a different level. Some people at 25 are really technically sound, have the kind of voice that can walk out and be a professional opera singer. I did not have that kind of voice at 25 because I had a massive technical overhaul during my master's, just of really needing to redo some things and work on some technique. So I thought, oh, I'm going to audition for agents and I'm going to start a career. And it didn't work out that way. But what did happen was, because of an audition for an agent, they liked me but just said, you need to still study. You still are in the study stage of your career. Here's a great teacher. Go call this person upon our recommendation and see if you can study with him. So I was living in Bologna with the family, being the au pair in the afternoons. I had my mornings off, and I was teaching English and then found the gig with the Bernstein School. But I took the train to Milan to study with my teacher. It was very under the Tuscan sun story kind of thing. So that was a little bit the direction it took, more of a continued study direction, although I did have the opportunity to debut in Italy in a small theater in a really nice role. So but that was more semi-professional. It wasn't at the top tier professional experience. But for me, it was really a really neat icing on crowning of the work there, getting to actually sing in a theater there.
Well, tell us more about your trip to Milan to study with your teacher. What did you take away? Is there any special moments, stories that you can recall? Or maybe not just with your teacher, but just being living in Italy.
Well, specifically with my teacher, we spoke Italian with one another. My Italian was really good, and we spoke the language of voice in Italian. And that was really interesting because that was a new aspect. Anytime you translate, there are new subtleties, nuance of language So I discovered voice in a different way through just the sheer fact that I was studying it in Italian. Then it was also really special that the music that we studied was Italian operatic repertoire. So we were speaking Italian, studying Italian rep, and it just became visceral and real to me, all of what I had done at the university level here and doing a master's degree. But then it just became more real. Plenty of stories about the teacher. We had two-hour lessons. I would get to his home, and he would be drinking a cafe and smoking a cigarette, and he'd say, "Do you want a cafe?" And I'm like, "No, I don't want a cafe," and because it's caffeine's really trying on the cords. But they were 2-hour lessons. I took the Eurostar up and down, up and back from Bologna to Milan, and then over what was in the final question? What did you say after? You said we were talking about
just
overall Italy in general.
Italy in general.
I just last week had a moment where I was teaching one of my students at UT Arlington, and whatever I was teaching the student was something that I had learned from my teacher there in Italy. And I was so overcome by the appreciation of that time that I had as a young girl who had big dreams, who just thought, oh, I can just move to Italy anyway, and I was a little naive, but at the same time, I guess that naivete gave me some courage to just go out and try things. But anyway, I was doing this, teaching this student, and I was so overwhelmed with appreciation for the opportunity, the support of my parents, who could have easily said, after having earned a master's degree, "Are you crazy? You're going to move across the world to be a babysitter? What are you thinking?" Because I really didn't have any concrete direction when I made that move. I just knew in my heart that it had to be, and I had to do it. Appreciation for him, for the things that I learned from him, for that experience there, for the time there, and just that I have that. I have been back since, but even if Italy doesn't remain a big part of my life in the future, which I hope that it will, but I just have those special years, those experiences of getting on that train as a bit of a starry-eyed student, because at the time I really was more living that student life, and that's something that I take away, and of course the friendships. I have people that I still am in touch with, but I really missed in that moment teaching that student. I just thought, wow, I wish I could just hop on a plane and take that train again and just go and have more lessons. And
just a quick question about lessons. Have you found yourself teaching at UT Arlington and a student, and then maybe getting so frustrated with that student that you start speaking Italian to it?
No, but what has happened is that a word will come to me in Italian. It'll be a concept, a vocal technical concept, and it's more succinct in Italian than it is in English, and so the word will come to my mind in Italian, and then I'll think, wait, now how do I say that in English? And that has happened. As far as the frustrating part, there are frustrations, obviously, as anybody that's in either education or just dealing with people on a daily basis. It doesn't even have to be education, but I just try to take deep breaths in those moments and just say, patience, just keep giving of yourself. In the long run, they're either going to do the work or they aren't going to do the work. And all I can do is just continue to be, hopefully, the guide toward them at least being passionate about wanting to do the work, because you have to love it to do it.
Well, now you're enjoying a splendid teaching and performance career, as we've been talking about, which you strongly believe both aspects of your artistic life, teaching and singing, are equal. They're balanced and vital to your expectations as a musician. Giving back to the community through performance as well as education. Explain to us this important duality that we've talked about in the past.
Right. I think that while teaching has made its way as my, let's say, day job, what I'm going to be doing for the majority of my life as a musician, that has made its path clear. I love teaching as much as I love performing, and I really, really love it. Seeing my students do well gives me the same amount of satisfaction as when I'm the one up there doing it. And so knowing that about myself now, as I've gone through the ranks of doing all the school and having the dream of being the international opera singer, and then that not really working out, and then going down the DMA path, I am so grateful and happy to say that I believe that teaching will always be the bigger area of what I do day in, day out. But the the duality and the where the performance comes in is performance, I feel like, fills me up, and that way I have more to give. Whereas if I never have an opportunity to share my own voice with other people, I think the constantly giving, you would burn out. So I think that's, for me at least, how the two complement, is that the performing feeds the teaching. I think that would be my answer to that.
Well, your performance opportunities over the years has brought you in various music genres, including opera, we talked about that, musical theater, and chamber. How has that helped you grow artistically to be able to do those different genres?
Well, I think that anytime you're doing something of another area, like if you're singing Italian opera, or if you're singing My Fair Lady, or if you're singing a Bach cantata, whatever that is, they're so varied, each of themselves, one from the other, that you have to expand, you have to jump out of your comfort zone. My comfort zone is the personality filled, sort of buoyant, bubbly personality type role, for example. That's just naturally what comes to me. Something that would be more introspective, for example, more of, like you mentioned, the chamber, or even there's a I feel like Dallas has a pretty good early music community, the Dallas Bach Society, various things that really draw on the early music. That's not necessarily what I'm going to do naturally. So being exposed to that genre automatically forces me to say, okay, this is not necessarily my natural bent, but I need to challenge myself. I need to grow. I need to learn how to do this well and artistically, in an artistically sound way. And that's a lot of what the doctorate did for me. When I got to UNT and started the DMA, that was something that I on a recital, in fact, I did some work with a harpsichordist, did some Caccini songs, which are very, very early Baroque. So with studying that was completely uncomfortable for me, but I learned so much, just because to grow, you have to do what you're not already good at.
Well, you've talked about all of these different styles that you've learned over the years. Have you ever been put in a scheduled situation where you perform in an opera one weekend, then followed by the next week you have to sing a musical? I mean, is it something that where you have one performance and the mindset has to switch for another?
Not as much in the performing. Not as much with the performing. I would say more in the study environment. I've experienced that more, where my performance schedule hasn't ever been that sort of back-to-back, where I've just felt like, okay, well, that's not true. In the Czech Republic last summer, we were doing this opera, but then I had to also do recitals, which were completely different. We were doing musical theater recital repertoire, and then we were doing this opera that was a completely different style. It was in the Viennese, what is that word that comes after that? The Viennese style. Strauss Viennese, right? And that was just a complete difference. So having to go back and forth between those two styles was, I guess, a recent performance experience that was sort of challenging too, because there's just different ways that you perform and sing musical theater versus how we were performing and singing that. So, but more, I would say, in a study environment as well, having to go into a class where you have to sing a variety of different styles all in one semester, you know, you're studying this style or that style or the other, having to just use your technique but then adapt it to the style. It's come in a variety of different ways. It's also tough with teaching. Going from, you're teaching one student an Italian art song, and then you have to jump to another student the very next hour that's working on a French aria. I mean, it's just completely different. So that's a way that I experience it more every day, is in the teaching.
Well, as I mentioned, this Sunday, 2 p.m. at the Eisman here in Richardson, you'll be making your second appearance with Eugene Meliaro Corporan and the Lone Star Wind Orchestra. Now, last season, it was the music of Leonard Bernstein, singing songs from the musical Candide. Well, this Sunday, it'll be music of George Gershwin, singing arias from the opera Porgy and Bess. There's that duality again. Musical, I mean, this is a year, so, but musical to opera. Tell us about the arias and songs you'll be singing this Sunday, and maybe you can give us a taste of what's to come.
Yeah. The lineup will be Summertime, which is really very, it's a very famous song, aria, that really everyone's heard. It's very often performed out of its context of the show. The second one is My Man's Gone Now, which is just a completely different mood. So that'll be, even though we're in one style, we're in the Gershwin style, we're completely going to a different mood from the summertime, the lazy summer afternoon, singing to the baby, you know, that's in your arms, just relaxed, to something where a woman has lost her man and she's upset. So that's, I think, really where that challenge comes in sometimes. It's just jumping in mood in a either a recital or a concert. And then we've got a duet that I'm singing with the baritone, bass baritone, that's also on the show. And that one is just a love duet, really. And then the last one is just kind of a fun ender that is just a, I don't know how we would describe that last one. Just we're going to heaven, we're happy, we're closing it out. So that's kind of what the lineup will be for Sunday. Just a variety of different moods and styles.
Do you want to give us a taste?
I'll do a little of Summertime.
Okay. Again, Jennifer will be featured along with baritone Christian Bester and pianist Jose Fagali, a Van Cliburn winner, this Sunday, 2 p.m. at the Eisman for an all-Gershwin program that includes Porgy and Bess, An American in Paris, Cuban Overture, and Rhapsody in Blue. For more information, you can visit LoneStarWindOrchestra.com, and to purchase tickets, we'd love for all of you to come on Sunday. Jennifer, there you go. So we'll go ahead and conclude with one quick question. Is there a website, email, or place we can go to find out more information about you?
No. I don't have a website. I don't have my own website. It's sort of one of those things that for years I've said, oh, I should get a website. Oh, I should do that.
Well, we'll talk more later.
Yeah.
I'll show you
where
to go.
Maybe you can help me with that.
Well, at this time, let's turn to the audience for any questions.
Yes, I want to know what you sang in Italy. You said in that small theater and it was a role that you liked.
Oh, yeah.
What was the role?
I sang Musetta
okay. In
La Bohème.
You want to share that with us?
I did. And it was, really what a great memory.
That's a hard one.
Really special.
You know, when you got up and you walked back there, I thought, well, gee, she's walking far away. You know, we've been hearing you chatter, 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 chatter. And I was like, whoa! And I was like, oh my! Now, how did you know, as a little old kid, or in high school, that was what was going to come out of you?
I didn't. My voice was much smaller. It's really been. Now, I always had the high notes. You know, I always had the tippy top, easy high notes. But as far as the more of the body that you hear in my voice now, I'm 34. So just in maturity, I think I'm continuing to train my voice as I've matured and gotten a little bit older. That's been one thing. Naturally, it grows, it develops. The other thing about it is efficiency. So even though a lot of people say, oh, you're so small, how do you make that sound? It has more to do with just being efficient with the muscle, with the vocal mechanism itself, and that has to do with the breath, mostly. But it also has to do with the placement, with opening the throat, that sound has got to resonate somewhere, and that somewhere is inside of my vocal tract before it comes out. I always thought, maybe it's because people told me, like my mom, that I had maybe something special, but I didn't really know what it would come turn out to be. And I still feel like sometimes there's more for me, but I just kind of have to be patient and just keep trying, keep training, keep working. But I didn't really, because it was so much, it was about one third of that, say 10 years ago, really.
Ooh. Wow.
Not one third, that's a little low. It was 10 years ago, it would have been, yeah, when I was in high school though, I could play a tape of me singing in high school, and you would never, ever guess that it's me. It was a very small, very kind of small sound.
That's hard to believe.
Good, because that means that something's working.
Tuition paid off.
Tuition paid off. Still paying off the tuition. Right.
Well, as you're working with your students, and I love the fact that you talk about, you know, how sometimes you think in Italian, and therefore you have to translate from Italian back to English. But as you're working with them, what is one piece of advice that maybe you received through the years that has always held true for you? Whether it's as in, you know, maintaining professionalism on the stage, regardless of what is going on around you, which may or may not be mm-hmm. right, or how things were rehearsed, or, mm-hmm. You know, just having faith in yourself.
Yeah, I think those are two great things that you just said. I think another thing that I would say that I talk about a lot with my students is the importance of finding your voice. There's so much in vocal training and learning how to sing. There's a danger of imitating or of hearing some sound that you like and trying to make your voice do that sound when maybe that's not what your voice should be sounding like. So I think one of the things that I have learned from experience from a great teacher, but also just in my own developing, is to let my voice do and be what it will be. My voice is special. No one else has it. The timbre of my voice is nowhere. No one can possibly have it because it's mine. And to try to uncover that uniqueness of my sound, and that's what I try to do with my students. So that would be another thing that's so important, just part of my vocal morality, because I think it's a moral issue, because young singers, really, many of them can really ruin their voices trying to do things to them and manipulate the voice in ways that is not healthy and is not true to their own instrument. So that would be, just been talking about that today actually a lot, so at UTA, and that's fresh on my mind.
How is teaching men different from women? And is it different because you're a female or not? Explain.
It is different. The basic principles are similar. Well, the same, really. Efficiency, breath, supporting the voice with the body. The registration, vocal registers, those things line up as well. The difference mostly is that with the women, I can feel inside me what they are doing when they sing. So when I'm correcting one of my female students, and I'm figuring out what to tell them to correct, how to tell them to correct it, I can sort of feel and do almost, internally. I don't do it out loud, but what they're doing, so I can more maybe specifically give them exact information about how to fix something. Whereas with the men, I rely more on my ear and fixing it with the sound that I know that they need to make a healthy sound. So I think that I don't think that I'm a better teacher of women or men. I just feel that my approach is a little bit different because I can't feel the male voice the way I feel like I can feel the inside of a woman's voice. But I would say with my mezzos, for example, there I rely a lot on sound as well because I'm not a mezzo. So while that's a woman I'm teaching, it's not my voice type. So does that... Sort of.
Have you been noticing any kind of trend through your students that come through your mm-hmm. halls of anything in particular? Either they're more excited toward one genre, or they're not as clued into music, or what have you noticed?
I wish that I had more students that were willing to put in that nuts and bolts kind of work, the kind of work that takes to build something over the long haul rather than that short instant gratification. I want to get in, I want to learn these songs and sing them and move on. It's a little bit of that. I think it has to do with some of the just how fast our lives are gotten. It's just a little bit like they want to press a button and it happen. And that's impossible with the study of singing. It, just back to your question earlier about what I thought in high school I would sound like to now, I graduated in high school in 95. So, I mean, that's just been a long time of waiting and being patient and continuing to train and continuing to work. So that would be one thing. The other thing is a lot of the students come in with a let's go to Dallas Christian College. That's a school where I have a lot of students that are studying music with the intention of using it in some sort of ministry church aspect. They very often have an idea, just because a lot of church music has gotten quite modern and contemporary in certain areas, not everywhere, but in certain areas. It's like I'll have a true blues soprano who has a soprano voice like me, and they almost are feeling, I think subconsciously, this pressure to make it sound like a belter, pop, contemporary, praise and worship style voice because of maybe what they think they need to be doing to continue going into the church ministry path. And so I fight that a lot, back to the idea of doing what your voice is naturally made to do and the way that your voice works, not trying to make it fit a mold. I have one male student that just has brought a lot of his pop singing into the studio, and I want him to do that. He enjoys it. Go, you know, have fun with that. But we can't sing a French melody and add a pop lick. It just doesn't, it just doesn't work. So there's those type things. But I think mostly it's just the patience of knowing that this vocal thing is not just, okay, let me just get through my 4 years of college and I'm done. I got my degree and now I'm done. It's, if you really want to do it and be a singer or be any type of musician, I think it would apply to any instrument. It's a lifelong process, a continued journey, growth. I don't want to ever stop being a student myself. I want to continue to learn. And so that's one thing I hope to instill in them.
Well, that leads me to ask you, who do you want to continue to learn from? Who are your idols?
Well, I really want to go back to Italy to work with that teacher. I really, really want to do that because that's been since 2004, since I had a lesson with him. So my voice has drastically changed since 2004. I want to continue to learn from him. My voice teacher from my master's degree was so pivotal. I mentioned earlier having a technical kind of overhaul where we really got nitty gritty with some technique. I really want to sing for her again because, again, so different now from what it was then. I continue currently to study with Lynn Eustace, who was my student for my my doctorate, and I saw her to prepare for this concert. So I think as far as like having some idol, some coach or somebody out there that I don't have that per se, but I do want to revisit those other teachers at some point. I really do.
Well, great. Well, it's time for our top 10 shorties. This is, we're going to have a minute, and I'll have 10 questions, and she'll just answer as quickly as she can.
Oh, boy.
We've always made it a minute, and simple questions, some short answer, thought-provoking questions, we'll see. All right, are we ready?
Yes.
Okay. What's your favorite color?
Red.
What was the last thing you bought?
The last thing I bought. Gas.
Okay. Do you find yourself singing in the shower?
No.
Are you a morning or night person?
Night.
Elvis or the Beatles?
Elvis.
What was your favorite thing that you did this past summer?
I went to Alaska to visit my sister.
That's nice. If you had to give up a favorite food, what would it be?
If I had to give up a food, I'm already a vegetarian, give up so many things.
Salad.
Let's see. If I had to give up something that was my favorite thing, I think I could give up fish.
Okay. What are your top three favorite songs to sing?
Oh, my goodness.
Top one favorite song to sing. Just one favorite song
one
to sing.
One favorite song to sing. The Lord's Prayer. There is an arrangement of the Lord's Prayer that I have sung at a gazillion weddings, and I just love to sing that. It's just the way that it's written is...
I'm going to do this. That's too
okay.
Anyways.
I'm just so wordy.
Do you believe in love at first sight?
Yes.
What is the origin of your married name, Ciobanu?
My husband is Romanian.
Okay.
He's grew up in Romania, and he immigrated to the States when he was 18, so he's been here for 20 years. And we met online while I was living in Italy. He was in California from Romania, and I was from Mississippi living in Italy, and we met online. So, Ciobanu, yeah, it's Romanian. Ciobanu.
Well, this is Airtime, and I'm your moderator, Chris Tucker. Arts Incubator of Richardson would like to give special thanks to the Richardson Theater Center for hosting this event. We invite you to check out artsincubatorrichardson.org for future events and news.
Thank you for listening to Airtime with Chris Tucker. To learn more about AIR, please visit our website at artsincubatorrichardson.com.